Good morning. It says 9:30. We can start. Okay. Oh, we missed you, Sheila. Now, we're back. So we are still in the middle of, we're getting to the actual brachas. We're leading up to it. And last week, we saw a few more fascinating things about the story. And this story, as we know, has so much depth and so many layers. So we try to move on, but there's always so many layers. There's one little part that I still want to talk about before we... But I'm going to actually read the psukim first. And I just do want to go back afterwards to one more small lesson from the fact that Bilam woke up really, really early to saddle his donkey. Because last week we spoke about the donkey and we mentioned the significance of the donkey throughout history and what it represents spiritually. But today I want to see a little bit more about the fact that he got up really early to saddle it and what that represents. But what I want you to do is look at you have two booklets. So the one that has the Chumash, that has the English and the Hebrew. And we're going to see these psukim because this is the part that we didn't read yet. These are the psukim that we'll tell, we'll see. We'll finish the perek and then we're going to start the... Good morning, Sylvia. Good morning. And to start the actual brachas itself, the amazing brachas that he gives. Okay. Okay, so if you look at the first page you have in front of you, and we have, it is perek chafez, chapter 22, and it is pasuk lamed vav, 36. Okay. Vayishma Balak. So now remember we said that after the whole story with the donkey, so Bilam asks, should I go? Should I not go? And Hashem says, go. He has to go. Now he's already gone, you know, gone this far. He is going. But as we mentioned, with the knowledge that he's not going to really be free to say whatever he wants, he's going to have to say what Hashem puts into his mouth. He knows that's true, and yet we'll see today underneath everything how he's still trying, because of his hatred of the Jews, Bilam has such a hatred that he is still trying to manipulate things, and he still has hope that he's going to be able to say something negative and actually curse the Jewish people. He still has hope. We'll see, everything is so, as we always say, everything is so eternal, and everything like sort of happens again and again, and you can see how the hatred drives him to such an extent that it makes him totally irrational, and he doesn't care, and he's going to get his way. Okay, but he goes, so it says, Vayishma Balak, so Balak heard, remember, because Balak was the one that sent for Bilam, he heard Kiva Bilam, that Bilam had come, Vayetze Lekrosai, and he went out to greet him, El Ir Mayav, to the city of Mayav, Asher al Gvul Arnon, which is on the border of Arnon, Asher Biktze HaGvul, which is at the edge of the border. Good morning, good morning. So what's happening here? Just something fascinating that we can see, because this is also interesting. I think it's also so parallel to now. The hatred for the Jews, that's equal. All these enemies, they hate us. They all want to destroy, they want to do anything they could. But they don't like each other either. But they don't care about that. That doesn't matter. They don't like each other. They'll stab each other in the back and at the same time put on some kind of front that they're going together to harm the Jewish people. So even in this pasuk, and we're going to see it underneath the Ara Chaim HaKadosh points out that the rivalry or the... Actually, it's not even rivalry. It's like the non-menschlichkeit and the way that Bilam and Balak treat each other. But even more, Balak, who's the king, who's hiring Bilam, right? He's dragging him from a very far away place and asking him, and he needs him to a certain extent, his powers, and yet he treats him with absolute disrespect. He doesn't give him any respect at all, even initially, even before the brachas come out of his mouth. So I'll show you something. Look what it says. It says, Vayishma Balak, Balak heard, Ki ba Bilam, that Bilam had come, and where does he go out to greet him? El Ir Mayav, to the cities of Mayav. Usually, you know, if somebody important is coming, you go out of the city to greet them before they arrive. But he waits till Bilam is in the city. The Ara Chaim says it's very specific. It's mentioned specifically to show us that Balak is treating Bilam with absolute disrespect, total disrespect. And what's fascinating is that despite that, the hatred that Bilam has is so strong that he keeps on going along with it. A normal person with self-respect, dignity, you know, maybe would turn around, go home, look how he's treating me. Nah, he doesn't care, because he has his own agenda, right? He cares more about hurting the Jews than he cares about how he's being treated. Okay, let's see what happens. And I'll show you something else beautiful. I'll just read two more psukim and I'll show you what Rashi says. Vayomer Balak el Bilam. So Balak says to Bilam, Haloi shalayach shalachti elecha likrei lach. Right away, the first thing, before anything, he already attacks him. And he says to him, did I not urgently send to you to summon you? Do you remember he sent for him once and he refused? He had to send again and it took him so long till he was able to come. And he's saying, what took you so long and why did you make it so difficult? He says, Lama lo halachta elai, why didn't you come to me? Ha'umnam lo uchal kabdecha, am I not incapable of honoring you? Like, in other words, am I not going to pay you enough? And the truth is that he was actually prophesizing a little bit that he won't really be able to pay him properly. And at the end, they both end up suffering from what they did. But he's so angry, and you can see that he isn't even able to be politically correct and disguise his anger. You know, politicians, a king, usually at least puts up a front. I mean, we can see now, they put up a front to a certain point. Good morning, good morning. But here, he can't even put up the front for a minute. The first thing he says to him is, what took you so long to come? I called you and you didn't come. What's going on? So it's a fascinating thing. I want to just show you something. Let me just read one more pasuk and I'll show you. Pasuk Lamed Ches, Vayoymer Bilam el Balak, and Bilam says to Balak, Hine basi elecha, behold, I have come to you. Ata now, hayachol uchal daber mu'uma. But he says to you, will I be able to say anything? Hadavar asher yosim alikim b'fi, oisai adaber. That which Hashem puts into my mouth, that I will say. So it sounds like, it's also very political, it sounds like Bilam is admitting to the fact that he's only going to be able to say what Hashem tells him to say, right? Even though we know that in his mind and in his heart, Bilam is still trying to manipulate the situation and has tremendous hope that he's going to be able to do damage to the Jewish people. So it's quite amazing what's happening here on every single level. And I wanted to show you something that I thought was just incredible. There's actually, you know what? I'm going to read one more pasuk because there's two Rashis that, again, I tell you, everything we learn and it's like as if it could be happening now. We could be reading this in the paper today. It's mamish as if it's today. And I'll show you something. So in pasuk Lamed Tes, Vayelech Bilam and Balak. So now Bilam goes with Balak. Vayavayu Kiryas Chutzais. And they come to a place called Kiryas Chutzais. Now, what's going to happen now is they are in the country of Mayav, right? The Jewish people are camped outside of Mayav. What Balak wants is that Bilam should be able to see the Jewish people. And obviously, what he's hoping is to curse them or to find some kind of magic, some kind of divinations that's going to cause harm to the Jewish people. So he's taking him to a spot where he's hoping that he will have a view of the Jewish people, right? I want to just show you something interesting before we go to the next part. What? Sorry. Okay, so let's look into Rashi for a minute. If you go to the bottom of the page, first of all, he says, in Sarei Balak, on the bottom of that first page, Sameach lekalalam, he was happy to curse the Jewish people, kamaisam, as they were. That's how he went. He went with them with the same heart, with the same mind, even though they thought he was coming to curse, right? And he knew that Hashem had told him he's not going to be able to, but he's going in sync with them. The only thing Hashem gave him permission was just to join them, not to say anything negative, but he's still hoping. Vayishma Balak, what is Balak here? So it says, Sholach shluchim lebasrei. Bilam sent messengers to inform him. And what is he saying? Why does he have to send him messengers? Because he was hoping, Bilam was hoping, that Balak would come out with this whole entourage of people, right? This whole honorable welcome. That's what he was hoping for. But that didn't happen, as we see. Because we know, as we mentioned about Bilam, his hatred for the Jews was one thing, and his desire and his incredible need for honor and his arrogance was an incredible part of his personality. He was a very arrogant, self-centered, but also very much in need of publicity kind of person. That's what he was. So to him, it was important that Balak should show him the honor and come out, but Balak doesn't buy it because Balak is just as arrogant as him and waits for him to come into the city, as we saw. But the next part is interesting. Where do they show? What's Balak's plan now? Remember, Balak is the king, and he's the one that's worried about his people, so to speak, officially worried that the Jewish people will harm his people, right? That's what he's saying. Even though, just to make sure we understand, that Balak knows that the Jewish people are not about to attack them. He knows that. It's been made clear. They are not attacking the nation of Moav. They are not permitted to attack the nation of Moav. They have been commanded by Hashem that they should not attack the nation of Moav. He knows that. But look what he does. So he takes Bilam and he shows him, it says, El Ir Moav. Rashi says, why are we stressing the word Ir city? Because El Metropolin Shalai, to its metropolis. Ir HaChashuva Shalai, its main city. Why? What is he saying to Bilam? Re'ei Ma'elu Mivakshim La'akar. See what these Israelites wish to uproot. It could be in the paper today. Mamish, exactly. It's exactly what they're writing. They take it from the stories. It's like the same. Okay. Now, it goes even more. That's not even enough. Look what it says. And then I want to show you what it says by Kiryas Chutzas. He takes him to this place, Kiryas Chutzas. Why does he specifically take him there? Ir Mleya Shvakim, a city full of marketplaces. Anoshim, Noshim, V'taf, B'chutzaseha, men, women, and children in its plazas. As if to say again, Re'ei, see, but even more. This one's even more. Not only see, V'rachim, and have compassion. Nebach, compassion. Compassion for what? What do they have to have compassion? They're not in any danger. There's nothing happening to them. Absolutely nothing. The Jews are no threat. They are not even allowed to attack them. And yet, what is Balak trying to do? He's trying to create a narrative that doesn't exist. It doesn't exist at all. Just like now, there's nothing existing out of the hat. And what does he say? He says, have pity, shaloya akru elu, so that these shouldn't be uprooted. You see how they say, men, women, children, all the same stories. They take it straight from here. And Bilam, of course, because he hates the Jews anyway, so to him it doesn't take much to arouse his hatred even more. And he says, oh yeah, this is great. We're going to do something. We're going to make sure. Okay, let's see what happens next. So just before we go, I just want to make sure. I didn't make so many copies of the Mefarshim inside. I just want to make sure that I don't miss a few. Okay, yeah, we said about the arrogance. And, I'm going to see something. Oh, yeah, that's right. That was very interesting that the Or HaChaim says, he says even more. It's mamish like the narrative now. El Ir Moav, he says to the city of Moav. Because he says to Bilam, Balak says to Bilam, you see these people? You know what they did before they came here, before they're camping here? Because they had fought some wars. Remember, they had just destroyed Sichon, right? He says, look what they've done. In the time of Noach, Hashem put certain borders in place, you know, like they say now. I don't know from what time they're saying, from when exactly they decided where the borders are. But anyways, over there they say, from the time of Noach, there was established borders. And these people, they don't respect other people's borders. They go and attack nations, as if they attack nations. They only attacked nations when they were attacked, right? When Sichon came out to fight them, that's when they had to defend themselves. And that's when Moshe Rabbeinu destroyed the giants. But he says, look, you see, that's why he's pointing out like borders. You see borders? Borders, these people don't respect other people's borders. Again, fascinating how the way it happens is so exact. Okay, so then let's see what happens next. Now, Bilam, is, again, he knows he's not guaranteed success. He has a bit of a problem. What's his problem? His problem is because he knows Hashem's not on his side, but he wants to try to engineer things that he should be able to get something negative on the Jewish people. So he has to dig really far. And first thing, what does he do? So he does like this. If you look in Pasuk Lamed Tes, Vayelech Bilam and Balak. So Bilam goes with Balak. It's interesting. Who goes with who? Bilam goes with Balak. It should really say it the other way around, right? Because Balak hired Bilam. Again, showing the disrespect. We see over here that Bilam has to follow Balak. Balak goes ahead. He's almost leaving Bilam behind and making Bilam just tag after him. And they come to Kiryas Chutzais. And what do they do? Vayizbach Balak. And Balak sacrifices Bakar Vitzoin, a sheep and cattle, but it actually says it in the singular. Vayishlach leBilam, and he sends it to Bilam, ulesarim asher itai, and the officers who were with him. What does it mean he sends it to them? Obviously, they're not with him, right? If he has to send it to them. And what is it for? Look what he says. It's obviously for them to eat, right? That's what it is. In other words, fascinating thing that's happening. First of all, Bilam has come with people. He didn't come on his own, right? First of all, there's all the officers that Balak had sent, right? So there's a bunch of people. And his own servants, his own men that he brought with him. You know, I mean, he doesn't travel on his own. He's an honorable person. What does Balak send him? One sheep, one cattle. And says a measly one, a small one, a skinny, scrawny one. There wasn't enough meat for all of them. He was greedy and he was stingy. That's what he was. And he was disrespecting Bilam the whole time, putting down in any underhanded way he could. It wasn't obvious, right? You couldn't point anything out, but it was underhand. It was just, it's like you see now, it's fascinating how people will join each other. Everybody will join, officially make an alliance, but they hate each other. Even sometimes they hate each other as much as, well, not as much, just a little less than they hate us, you know? And they treat each other with such disrespect because they really don't care. They don't care about anything. And Balak didn't care about Bilam. He just wanted something from him, and he treats him with absolute disrespect. But this part is just that he's feeding him because he has to feed him. He hired him. That's all it's saying over here. And then it says, and it was in the morning, and Balak takes Bilam, and he takes him. Look what he says. He takes him on the heights of Baal, which is according to most opinions, simply just a mountain, so that he should be able to see the Jewish people. And what will happen? Vayar misham k'tzei ha'am. From there he saw the edge of the people. Interesting how it says vayhi ba'boker, and it was in the morning. Why is it stressing the morning? Let's see if Rashi says before I tell you something interesting. Okay. Look, Rashi just says that it was like pulled, you know, it was like a small amount of sheep. And then it says also that he took him to the Baal because this was the high place of his deity. It was the name of an Avodah Zarah, an idol worship, because he was hoping for the power of the idol worship, that the idol should help curse the Jewish people. Okay, but something very interesting about the mourning. Two things. You know, there's a fascinating thing that it says about kings, that kings don't wake up early in the morning. It's like we say teenagers and kings. Morning is sacred time to sleep, right? You don't have to wake up early. Early is for hardworking people. Kings don't wake up early in the morning. Yet over here, Balak woke up early in the morning. Why? Because of his hatred and because of his eagerness to harm the Jewish people. So it's again showing a little bit of an out of the norm for the hate, that the hatred is pushing them into. The other thing is interesting. It says like this. This I think some of us could relate to, older people maybe. Remember we said on the way, Bilam's foot was harmed, right? He had the donkey pressed against the wall, and Bilam became, that's, you know, if you see in the pictures, one thing, Balak doesn't have an eye, Bilam is lame, I don't know, anyway, he became lame. So maybe we can say that his arthritis set in badly, and it says that the mornings, the pain is very bad. When you get out of bed in the morning, the pain is very, very bad. Initially, what should have been was that it should have been that he should have let him rest in the morning, get up slowly, and only then lead him to go, especially because he had to climb a bit of a mountain, to go up on the mountain. But because of Balak's eagerness and Bilam's own hatred, what happens is that he doesn't care about Bilam's disability. He doesn't care about the fact that it's early in the morning, and they rush up in the morning to go up on the mountain, and what do they see? This is also interesting. The edge of the people. So there's a whole discussion by a lot of the Mefarshim. What is it that they were able to see? And why does it say the edge of the people? So it's interesting, because there's different ways of looking at it. If you want, remember we said we want, obviously what Bilam wants is to be able to curse the Jewish people, right? So he wants to cease to feel negative, right? He wants to have a negative energy. He wants to tap into a negative energy. He wants to feel negatively towards them. So there's different opinions. What's going to cause more negativity? Is it going to be when he sees the entire people, or if he just sees a small part of them? So there's different ways to look at it. On the one hand, if you see the entire Jewish people, if you look at a whole nation, inevitably, in a nation, there's all kinds of people. So there'll be a lot of good people, but there's always the odd, you know, not such good one in there. So maybe that's better if you can see everybody, because then you can zero in on the ones that deserve a curse, so to speak. That's one way. Or another way to look at it is, when you look at the ktsei, that means the edge. The edge implies the fringe. You know, when you talk about the fringe, even in English, it's the people who don't fit in. The people who are on the outside. They're the ones who perhaps maybe Bilam thought they could deserve a, like they might have angered Hashem once. They're the ones who are not fitting in. They're the ones who are not conforming. Perhaps they deserve a curse. So it all depends on, and that's why we'll see that in the there's four different sets of brachas, but three of them he moves, and one time he sees all, one time he sees part, one time he sees a fringe. They're trying all different ways to see what's going to work to get something negative out about the Jewish people. Okay, let's see what happens now. And we're going to come back to the other ideas soon. Let's see what, just want to read a few of these psukim before we get to the actual first set. Vayomer Bilam el Balak. So now Bilam has to come up with his own plan. How is he going to get some negative energy, so to speak, tap into a negative energy, right? This is chapter 23 now. Parek Chaf Gimel. Vayomer Bilam el Balak. So Bilam says to Balak, Bnei li bazeh shiva mizbechais. Build for me 7 altars. V'hochein li bazeh shiva parim. And prepare 7 cows. V'shiva elim and 7 rams, right? Because he's going to bring up all of these different sacrifices. Officially, he's trying to tap into something negative. Why? Where does this come in? What's negative here? So I'll just show you. And then it says, Vayas Balak ash kasher dibe Bilam. So Balak had to follow instructions here, and he did exactly as Bilam asked. Vayal Balak u Bilam par v'ayal b'mizbeach. And they brought up a bull and a ram on each altar, right? Not on one, but on each one, right? Now, what's the idea here? So I want to just show you something. Look at the bottom. Look what Rashi says. It doesn't have it here. You know what? I'm going to read one more passage because Rashi says it afterwards. He says like this: "Vayomer Bilam leBalak." So Bilam says to Balak, "Hisyatze v'alayla secha, stand by your burnt offering, but ve'elcha, and I will go. Ula yikara Hashem lekrasi. Maybe Hashem will happen upon me, as he says, udvar mayareini, and show me something. V'higadti lach, and I will tell you." Vayelech Shefi, and this is an interesting word. Shefi, here they translate, he went alone. But Shefi is much deeper than alone. He went to meditate. That's what it says. You see, he's tapping in to the impure spiritual powers, obviously. And the Ramban explains it quite strongly. The Ramban explains that what Bilam realizes that he needs to do is he needs to go into some kind of like all these spiritual whatever people, some kind of almost trance-like state where he can stare at the Jewish people, almost remove himself from where he is, so like leave his physical self in a certain way, at least in his mind, and concentrate very, very, very strongly, tap into certain powers that there are in the universe, and he's trying to tap into the negative powers, and hopefully through that he's going to be able to have something negative to say about the Jewish people. And here we see a fascinating thing. This concept of meditation was already in those times quite strongly, and they knew the power of being on their own as opposed to being with other people where there's distraction of the physical nature which they wanted to remove themselves from. That's why he tells Balak that he has to be on his own, and Balak listens. So Balak can't go with him, right? He has to be totally on his own. And just what happens then, and also very interesting language, Ula yikara Hashem lekrasi, maybe Hashem will meet me. You see how he says it? He has to admit that he doesn't have the power to summon God. He's not going to say, God, come, and Hashem will come. Maybe, you see, even though he's so arrogant, he has no choice. Because, and why is it? Also because even when the messengers came initially to get him, he said, I'll tell you, I'm going to ask God, I'll tell you in the morning. Over there, he was like, sure. Because this was morning, daytime. That was night, evening. Interesting was that Bilam knew that Hashem doesn't appear to prophets of the nations only at night. In other words, what it means is, what does it mean at night? It means for him to get a clear vision during the day, that's like the level of Moshe Rabbeinu. That's the level of a holy tzaddik. A night is like a dream. It's a different type of a trance-like state. It's not the same kind of revelation. It's a much, much like lower revelation of God that he could even hope for. But here he wants to get some kind of tapping into during the day. That's why he knows that he can't, obviously he can't be sure. What ends up happening is that he does get a revelation. And this is a very big question. How is it that Bilam, this wicked man, does have a revelation of godliness? In other words, Hashem speaks through him the most beautiful words of brachas that we have received throughout our whole history, and that stands us till now, how did it come through such a wicked man during the day? And we'll see in a minute how it worked. Obviously, it wasn't in his merit. It was obviously in the merit of the Jewish people that that happened. And he became just a conduit. And how that worked, we'll see what the Ora Chaim tells us, what Hashem had to do. But you can see that even he's unsure, and he has to admit that he's not sure what's going to happen. What happens? Vayikar Elokim el Bilam. And look how they translate it. And Hashem happened upon Bilam. Instead of Vayikra, Hashem called. That's honorable. That's a nice way to say it. You know, I'm speaking to you. This was, he happened. It's almost like, you know, with Amalek, we say keri. They happenstance. It's like this idea where you just happen. It's like almost like coincidence. It's so much of a lower type of engagement, a lower encounter. And Rashi gives actually very strong language. I wanted to show you what Rashi says here. It says, Vayikar loshen arai. This is an expression of impermanence. Loshen gnai, an expression of shame. And he gives another example, Loshen tumas keri, an expression of the impurity of a seminal discharge. It's a very, very low language. And it continues on the next page. In Rashi, it says, Klaimer, what is he saying? Bekaishi ubebizayin. Hashem appeared to him with hesitancy and disdain. Haya nigla elav, and he would not have appeared to him by yayin by day. But why did he? It was only because to show chibasan shel Yisrael, the dearness, the fact that Hashem loves the Jewish people. That was the only reason. I just want to finish the pasuk itself because we didn't. And he says, so Hashem appeared to him. And what does he do? Vayikar Hashem. And what does Bilam do? He says, vayoymer. And he says, a love to him. Es shivas hamizbachais arachti. So Bilam says to God, I have, you know, set up seven altars, va'al par va'ayil ba'mizbeach, and I brought up a bull and a ram on each altar. What is he saying? Obviously, if he believes Hashem, right, that he's talking to God, obviously God knows what he's brought up. What is the message that he's trying to say to Hashem? So he's obviously trying to tell him something. So Rashi says, what is he trying to tell him? So very, very fascinating. Rashi says that Bilam has a message. Again, the manipulation. You see the manipulation that Bilam is using. What is it over here? So he says, Shiva mizbechai sarachti. I have arranged seven altars. He says, Ein ksiv kan. It doesn't say, I have arranged seven. He says, Es shivas hamizbechais, like the seven. Why? What is he trying to say? Because he's saying, Aveseyim shel elu, the forefathers of these Israelites, banu lefanecha, built before you shiva mizbechais, seven altars. And what did I do? And what does that mean? Let me see. What does he mean, seven altars by the forefathers? Not all of them built seven altars, all together, all three. If you count up how many they each built, Avraham built four. Yitzchak built one, I think Avram built, yeah, and that's right, and Yaakov built two. So all together you get seven, and I build myself seven. Not only that, Avraham only brought a par, or actually an isle, and ram, and I bring a par and an isle. In other words, I am greater than all of them. I treat you with more respect. I make seven altars. They only made a few, and I bring you more karbanis. How could you not bestow upon me what I want to curse the Jewish people? Okay, this is his manipulation, so to speak, to show that he is even better than the others. It sounds stupid and petty, but what he's trying to say is, you think that the forefathers served you wholeheartedly? I serve you more wholeheartedly. I have more your good intention in mind. How could he possibly be saying that if he wants to harm the Jewish people? So obviously, what is Bilam's really, what is he really, really trying to accomplish here? He's really trying to accomplish, and this is very interesting because unfortunately there is power in that. He is trying to find fault in the Jewish people. And look, we're not perfect. There's no question about it. None of us are perfect. And there is always fault to find in a human being. What he's trying to say, and this is how he's manipulating Hashem, is you are the God of this wonderful people, and you've done so many miracles for them, right? You're such an amazing God. Took them out of Egypt, gave them everything, and look at these people. What do they do? As soon as you do something good, do they show gratitude? Not really, as we know. He brings up the Chet HaEgel. That's why he's bringing this par, this cow. You know what he's trying to remind God? Look what they did after all the miracles that you did for them. Moshe Rabbeinu is on the mountain a few minutes late, and already they're serving a golden calf. So he's manipulating the situation to try and bring out that these people don't deserve the love that you show them. That's what he's trying to do. And I just want to show you something else in a minute. I want to just read a few pesukim, and I want to just show you something. Just thinking, yeah, one more pasuk, and before we read, because this is now the last pasuk, which leads up to the actual brachas that are going to come out of his mouth. It says, "Vayosem Hashem davar b'fi Bilam." Right, so Hashem put an utterance, something into the mouth of Bilam, and Vayomer, and he says, "Shuvel Balak." Go back to Balak, and thus you shall speak. In other words, Hashem wants Balak to hear what comes out of Bilam's mouth, which we know will not be the curses that he intends, but it will be the most beautiful brachas. Now, before we go, I want to show you something. If you go on the other booklet that you have, I made it into two so it's easier. I'm going to just show you something beautiful. Before we do that, let's see if there's any of the other mefarshim here. Okay. Oh, yes. Also, why he did seven altars, fascinating. Because what is he saying? Okay, so, you know, first he said, you know, look at this nation, they're going to destroy my nation. But even more than that, even if that's not true, right, the truth is the Jewish people were not going to destroy Moav. But what were they, yes, going to do? That is true. They were about soon to enter the land of Israel, and all of the seven nations that up until that point were living in the land of Israel would have to leave, right? The Jewish people gave them a chance to leave or they would be destroyed, right? So seven altars corresponding to the seven nations that the Jewish people are now going to cause to be eternal refugees. Okay, that's what he's saying. Yeah, exactly. So you see, this is Bilam's plan. It's actually incredible, but yeah, it's exactly what it is. And this is what he's saying to God. See what kind of people this is. I mean, it's obviously it's Hashem's command, but it's ridiculous. But this is what he's saying. So everything is so specific and so exact. I want to just show you one more thing. Okay. Let me just see. Oh. If there was anything else important, there's a few beautiful things, but oh, yeah, the Ramban describes that when it says Vayikar Elikim, that Hashem happened, you know, to come on to Bilam, he describes actually from the Medrashim, I guess he knew, he said that what it looked like, if you would have like a, I guess if we would have a video camera and we would be able to see what Bilam looked like at that time, he actually fell into like a really deep trance, right? That's what he tried because he was meditating. And all of a sudden, when he felt this presence of God, he began to tremble and sweat. And he went into like this state of extreme anxiety, because even though he was partially spiritual, but he wasn't used to getting messages from Hashem. You know, he was more like a magician and a divination, and he had certain dreams sometimes. But to have that type of a encounter, that he'd never had. So it describes that he mamish went into this state of shock almost, and he was trembling and he was sweating. But Hashem commanded him, therefore, and said, go down and I want you to be with Balak, and you will speak what I will say. And in that state, the words came out of his mouth. Now, the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh explains beautifully something else fascinating. He says that, as we said before, how could it be such a disgusting, despicable person who hates the Jewish people and is such a low man? He was a very low man, very, very immoral person. How could it be that Hashem's beautiful words should come through his mouth? So the Aruch Chaim says that Hashem created a barrier in his mouth. The only way we could understand it maybe now is like when you go to the orthodontist and he puts a plate into your mouth. So there was actually a barrier that Hashem created, a physical barrier, but obviously it was more of a spiritual idea, that was within the mouth and the throat of Bilam. So when the words came through, they weren't even touching his physical body. That was the only way that Hashem could speak through Bilam. So it was through him, but not really through him. So why do it? Yeah. Why? Why not do it through Moshe Rabbeinu? Why not give the, if the Jewish people need these beautiful brachas, because obviously we do and we need them up until today, why through Bilam? So the reason is, and again we can relate to it, because if it comes through a Jewish mouth, nobody believes it. Hashem wanted the nations of the world also to hear that we are a blessed nation. The only way they will listen is if it comes through one of their prophets. And that's what Hashem wanted. Hashem wanted one of the non-Jewish prophets. Lahavdil, I don't really want to compare, but you know, now even you look at the media, when it's the Israeli media, nobody cares. But if somebody else says something nice once in a blue moon, okay, maybe somebody might listen for a minute. You see that it's not believed when it's from one of us. And these blessings weren't just for the Jewish people. They were for us. But they were also for the awareness of the nations to know that we are a blessed people. To give us that protection, at least partially, for them to know, if you do start up with them, you should know that you don't stand a chance. So this was part of it. This is a very beautiful thing. But yet, there had to be this barrier that Hashem created in the mouth of Bilam for it to come through. Fascinating thing. I wanted to show you something beautiful on the other paragraph. Before we go into the actual brachos, these brachos are absolutely beautiful. And today's ones, oh, I know we said it in the introduction, but today's ones, like I said, could have been written for today. Mamish. But I just want to show you on page number, I numbered the pages. Page number one. Sorry for the people on the screen. I actually didn't copy this one, but I just want to read, I'm not going to read the whole thing inside. I need this as a guide more, but I want to show you something beautiful. If you look on page number one, this was going back to this concept, as we said, when Bilam was going, he saddled his donkey by himself. Do you remember? He woke up early in the morning, again, early in the morning, and he's saddling his donkey. So many times people explain, what was Bilam trying to do? Bilam was trying to show how eager he is, and that's why he gets up early in the morning. And Hashem says to Bilam, your eagerness was preceded by somebody else. Who was it preceded by? Remember we said, by Avram Avinu. When Hashem commanded Avram to do the Akedah, Avram also woke up early in the morning and saddled his own donkey, right? So you think you're eager? You're too late. The Jewish people already were eager, right? Yeah, Avram already, not only eager, but he saddled his own donkey, he rushed, and he, you know, and so it's interesting. The saddling of the donkey was what was the similar thing. He did something, and you did something, but he already did it before you. So who do you think you are? How do you think you're going to accomplish anything? But just to take that just a little bit deeper, it's not only about the donkey, as we mentioned last week, the concept of the donkey, that's similar. There's a lot more that's happening here that's similar, and there's one line here that's very important. The line that's used is, and I just want to see if I can see it here, where it is here. No, okay, I don't see it in here now. Okay, so the line that Rashi uses is, you can see on the top, on the top corner, it says, Ahava Mikalkeles es Hashura, the first line on the page actually, Ahava Mikalkeles es Hashura and Sina Mikalkeles es Hashura. What that means is, really over here, what Bilam was doing is, hatred, he had such a hatred, Mikalkeles es Hashura, it changes the normal behavior. Normal behavior, you call your young lad, and he's the one that's going to saddle the donkey for you. And no, but Bilam was in his hatred, so he saddled his own donkey. By Avraham, what motivated him to saddle his own donkey? His love of Hashem and his love and yearning to do the mitzvah also made Avraham change the normal behavior and saddle his own donkey. So we have a very beautiful idea that there's something very key in this changing of the rational behavior that is a key to what happens in this whole story. Because what's really the story here? The story of this whole thing is that Bilam wanted a curse and Hashem took the curses. Not only he blocked Bilam from saying curses, he did much more. He transformed the curses, right? He made that instead of it being curses, they became the greatest blessings, exactly. What is the connection between that and the changing, and not only changing, but totally, absolutely, like literally going beyond the rational, because it's the same idea. What's happening? So we say like this, that there's a way to serve God. You know, there's a way to serve God that we know. Usually a person has to serve God normally, right? What does normally mean? Normally means we live a normal life. which we're meant to do. We have a normal life and we do things normally and rationally, and then Hashem gives us mitzvahs that we put into our normal life. So like, you know, we get up, we eat, we sleep, we go to work. Of course, our whole goal and our whole priorities are to serve God. But it all fits into the normal, rational way we live our life. But as a Jew, what we are aware of and what we know is that no matter how rational and how normal we think we live our life or we want to live our life, we can't. We don't live normal lives. And whenever we delude ourselves, Hashem shows us immediately that we are not normal, we don't live a normal life, and the destiny of the Jewish people is never going to work in the rational, normal way. Now, what happens? So a Jew, like Avram Avinu, what does he do? He has such an incredible yearning and such an incredible love of Hashem that to him, it doesn't matter what you're supposed to do. It doesn't matter what's comfortable. It doesn't matter what the world dictates or what seems to be the right way to do something. He loves Hashem, so that's all that matters. So like, it's like, you know, when you love something, you'll do even crazy things. You'll just be so motivated, nothing else exists. The only thing that exists is that you want to get close to that which you love. So therefore, everything falls away. Everything, the rational, the normal, the like even if you want to say, even putting things into an organized way, you do things a little bit unorganized, you're just spontaneous, you're just quick, you're just hurrying, you're yearning, and you do it passionately. That's what Avraham sets into our DNA. That's what he does because he loves Hashem so much. And he makes it that all of us, because we've all inherited from Avraham, this incredible love of Hashem, this incredible, not an understanding, it's more than an understanding, an identity that what are we? We're connected to Hashem. Everything else is secondary. And if anything should ever come that blocks that, well, that doesn't exist. It doesn't matter if it looks like it exists. It doesn't really exist because we are connected to Hashem. And therefore, okay, Hashem commands us to live normally. So normally we do. We do what we have to do. We work 6 days. We have Shabbos. We do normal things. But if anything should come in the way of us, so to speak, serving Hashem, immediately our default position is that it doesn't even exist. We'll do anything, anything irrational. What happens with Bilam? Bilam decides that he's going to show God, you think the Jewish people love you so much, so unconditionally, I'll show you that it's not true. And that's why, as we said, what does he do? He takes this cow and he shows God, remember the cow? Didn't happen that long ago. They served the golden calf. They don't love you so unconditionally. You think you have this beautiful nation that's like Avraham, you know, that loves you and will do anything for you and it doesn't matter, nothing will block them. No, it doesn't work like that. That's what Bilam tried to show Hashem. So Hashem responds to Bilam and he says, listen, Bilam, it could be that for a moment they make mistakes. It could be. It happens, of course. Yeah, we do. We make mistakes. And externally, it could look like we might not be connected to Hashem, but you have no idea. And that's why Rashi uses those words. Rasha, Hashem says to... That's what Hashem says to Bilam. Rasha, you wicked person. Kvar kedamucha Avram Avinu. Avraham precedes you. What does it mean, Avraham precedes you? Avraham is their DNA. You don't have a clue. You're just seeing the superficial. You just see the external. You have no idea of what a Jew really is. And Avram already made them into the people that they are. What type of people? A people who will do anything, rational, irrational, anything that it takes to remain connected to me. And we see this, that's what happens throughout. Now, therefore, because of this, I want to just show you, let me just show you something on page 2. Just let me read you one paragraph inside here. So on page 2 it says, let me just see. If you look at the second paragraph on page 2, Unaivdem Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so on this Hashem says, Rasha Kfar Kadamucha Avram Avihem, right? Their forefather Avram already preceded you. As Zayin Kitrug Durch Der Manen Di Anhogus from Bnei Yisrael, that this Kitrug, you know, this negative that he's trying to arouse against the Jewish people, Ken Nitchal Zayin, it's not possible that it could have an effect. Val Kfar Kadamucha Avram Avihem, Avram already preceded you. Vas bayem is given Chavash hu ba'atzmai. He himself saddled the donkey. Uba'ayfen fun ava mikal keles es ashura. That love changes the norm. On b'mele, v'ders chus fun Avram. So this merit of Avram, nitter lozen as der inyan fun chavash hu ba'atzmai. It's not going to allow Bilam's hatred that he's going to change the norm, that it should accomplish anything at all. And what happens is, and if you go to page number 3, what does that accomplish? So that accomplishes something absolutely incredible. So if you go on page 3, I want to show you something on the bottom. Here, let's look just to the bottom paragraph. The last one. On be'inyan zeh Rashi madgish. As the ahava biltu mugbelis, that this unlimited, irrational love for na idn su mekayim zayin ratzon Hashem, that a Jew has to serve Hashem, that we inherited from Avram, biz as der kiyam ha-mitzvahs, is shaloy al pi medida v'hagbala. The way we do a mitzvah, it's not just rational. As we say, what does it mean not just rational? Not only do we do a mitzvah when it's difficult, but we also do a mitzvah with such love, as we all know, that we do it beautifully. We do more than we have to. That also shows that it's irrational. It's like, you know, when you, it's a beautiful example would be, if you want to give somebody, if you have to give somebody a present because they've done something for you, you don't care about them, they mean nothing to you, but they did something for you, so you want to show appreciation, you give them a present. You'll go to the store, you'll tell the person, wrap the present, but you don't care, they can choose any wrapping, and you'll just give it to them. But if it's somebody you love, so firstly, the way you choose the present takes hours. Then you take it home and you wrap it with love. You put the nicest bow. You care so much. You invest so much. Does it really matter? The wrapping goes in the garbage. It's irrational, right? The person pulls open, especially a child. You ever see? They like tear it. You can put so much effort into the way you wrap it. And in a minute, the wrapping is gone. Why do you do it? It's not rational. But it's your love. And actually, it does mean something. It means a tremendous amount. And this is the way we serve Hashem. We know that if you look at throughout history, the way a Jew does a mitzvah, you know, if people would be aware, if you learn Shulchan Aruch, there's actually a lot of things that we don't have to do, right? Many things we don't have to. And yet, like if you walk into somebody's home on Shabbos, the way we set a Shabbos table, the way we... It doesn't say anywhere you have to do that. Where does it say you have to do that? But we love Shabbos. We love Hashem. So we want that. Who needs to have a Shabbos? Some people have like a special china for Shabbos. Who says you have to have that? You don't have to have that. Who says? But we don't have to. But we do it because we love it. And this is the same idea. So what Bilam didn't understand is that this irrational love, which translates into the way we actually serve Hashem, has already overridden his irrational hatred, therefore disqualifying and making it impossible for him, even in the most irrational hatred that he has and in the most schemes and manipulation that he's going to come up with, it's not going to work. It's impossible for it to work. And that's what Hashem says to him. And that's why Hashem says, not only will I make it that you won't be able to say anything, but I'm going to transform your words. Because what do the Jewish people do? They transform things. What does that mean, they transform things? And this is where we come to a little bit of a deeper idea. Because, you know, when we serve Hashem as we have to, you know, when you do the letter of the law, well, there are certain things that we do, certain things that we don't do, and that's all fine. You know, there's realms that we can... We say something very interesting. You know, there's a very beautiful idea that there's in the way Hashem created the world, there's different realms, right? So there's the realm of holiness. Then there's the realm of what we call pariv, maybe, you know, the klipa snaiga in the terminology of Kabbalah, which is that neutral range. That's most things. That's what we use to serve Hashem with, all the food, all the drink, all the clothing, all the normal day-to-day activities, which are neutral. But then there's a part, a realm, which is the untouchable part, right? It's like treif, you know, that's the part we're not allowed to. That part we don't engage. How do we deal with that? By not engaging, right? That part, in a sense, for us is out of bounds. And over there, what is revealed in that part? Only that Hashem is hidden. Nothing is revealed, right? That's why we're not allowed to touch it, right? If you see something that's not kosher, we know what? We know that Hashem doesn't want us to go there. That's all we know about it. But you know, there's a very interesting thing, that there is a possibility of a Jew to elevate even those realms, and to reveal godliness even in those realms. and to transform that realm. How? Normally we can't. Because you can't eat. How do we normally elevate something? If you eat something and then you use the energy to serve Hashem, well, then you've elevated that food. But you can't eat the treif, right? So how are you going to elevate it? So there's a very beautiful idea that if God, okay, this is not, you can't do it, it's only if Hashem makes it happen. But what happens if somebody made a mistake, right? Whatever it may be, whether because they didn't know or at a certain time in their life, let's say, for example, they ate something that wasn't kosher, what happens then? So it says that if the person does a very high level of tshuva, a tshuva from love, as we're talking about, where they go beyond themselves, they have the capacity to elevate even that realm, which is usually untouchable. And that realm becomes transformed to the point that even those parts that usually only hide godliness, they actually reveal godliness. How? How? Because what is it that is motivating the person to serve Hashem? Sometimes, if a person does tshuva from love, because if you think about it in life, we all have that in smaller ways. Let's just say, a simple example, I don't know, maybe for myself. If let's just say somebody gets a little bit angry or says something not nice to somebody and insults them. And then, because you were tired, you weren't feeling well, you had a headache, whatever it may be, whatever the reason. The next day or the next hour even, you start to really feel bad. You reflect and you realize what you've done. And it kills you. It's eating at you. And all day, it's eating at you. What did you do? How did I let those words come out of my mouth? I hurt them. What do you do? What could it motivate you? After a while, so either you can just feel guilty, or for some people, what it will motivate them is they'll pick up the phone, they'll apologize profusely, they'll buy the person something, they'll treat them even nicer next time. What caused the extra kindness? The original harshness really did, right? So what does that mean? You are transforming that harshness, that harshness has become the motivation for something more positive, you realize. So to begin with, you don't insult somebody. We don't go about insulting in order to make up. That's not the way to do it. But if it already happened, sometimes that realm, which is usually untouchable, becomes the motivation for something even greater. And here, this is what Hashem is saying to Bilam. You think these people have, there are certain parts of them that you go, like, they sinned the golden calf, they can be cursed. No. These people serve me with such love. They love me so much that even when they make a mistake, it doesn't stay in the mistake realm. They start to regret it. And it motivates them to come even closer to me. Therefore, it's transformed. And therefore, the words of Bilam became from negative, which was what was in his mind, transformed to the most beautiful, powerful brachas. Time went very, very fast. I want to read one pasuk, and we're going to go into depth next week. I just want to read one pasuk because I can't leave it. I just have the just one pasuk of which is like I say, so now. Just go back for 1 minute, and then next week we'll see some more intention. To the other booklet. I'm going to show you something nice. Just one of the... Oh, yeah, I know we mentioned this, but it's just so now, like, unbelievable. Just to give us some, how do we say it, some encouragement. He says, in Pasuk Tes, if you go to page 290, it's Pasuk Tes. Ki meirosh tsurim erenu, right? So what does he say, Bilam? I see them from the top. Over here it says from its origin. But the simple explanation, I see them from the top of the mountain, right? Bilam is standing on top of the mountain, and he's looking at the Jewish people. Umigva'is ashurenu, and from the hills I view it. Hen levadad yishkain. Behold, it is a nation that will dwell alone, or as they translate, in solitude. Uvagoyim lo yischashav, and not be reckoned amongst the nations. And here we have the beautiful words which we live with, which can sound negative, and we can look at it as negative, that we are a nation that dwells alone, which means that we are never, ever, no matter how much we delude ourselves, able to be similar to the other nations. We are not like them. What does that mean, we are not like them? We are not one of them. And when we forget it, they remind us. But we don't have to forget it, because it's a good thing. And we're going to see next week how it's a good thing. In some ways, it looks like such a negative thing. They hate us. They treat us so badly. But here we can see, and this is what, I'll just tell you one very beautiful thing. When we say that they are not reckoned amongst the nations, Hashem says that when Mashiach will come, you know, at the end of times, all the negativity of all the nations will be gone. They will disappear. But my nation exists forever. We should know that we have an eternity to us which is different to everybody else. We are a nation that dwells alone. We are a nation that dwells alone in the UN. We are a nation that dwells alone physically, spiritually, geographically. We are not like anybody else. We will never be. We never were, and we never will be. But we shouldn't be worried about it. We shouldn't be afraid of it. It's not a curse. It's a bracha, and we have to remember that. This is something which is a bracha. So next week we'll learn more how it truly is a bracha and how it beautiful, how it really, really can hold us up. So yeah, we should have a good week. And Emir Hashem, we shouldn't need to learn it. We should just see it, as we can see, in a revealed way. Please, God. Somebody reminds us, Arona, that's it. Exactly.